Hi, and welcome to Weekend Watchlist, a look at what screening and streaming brought to you by the Letterboxd Show. I'm Mia. He's Slim.
Hello.
And together, we are going to dig through what's dropping this weekend, last weekend, recent trends on Letterboxd, and we'll also take a peek at our own watch lists, all under 30 minutes for your money back. Also, happy 420 to all who celebrate.
And speaking of 420, I think we said last week, if we went over, we're going to remove Mitchell's Twitter blue check. So if you look at Mitchell's Twitter account, maybe it's gone by the time you're listening. But it's Bo is Afraid week. Maybe the biggest week of all time. A brand new Ari Aster film. This is a Letterboxd dream. Not only will we talk about that movie, but also Evil Dead Rise, Chevalier. Parker Posey's going to call in later. Your community reviews, tagged weekend watch lists, and as always, we'll shuffle our watch lists together, including, this is a big note here, you watch Tim Burton's Batman for the very first time. We'll get into it later in the show.
Oh, my bat journey begins. But first, we have to get scared, Slim.
Scare me.
Slim is afraid, Mia is afraid, and Bo is afraid. Directed by Ari Aster, this is on 137,000 watch lists, and it is now wide in theaters. The synopsis is brief. A paranoid man embarks on an epic odyssey to get home to his mother.
People are like chomping at the bit to see this, to drop an internet hot take. You got these movie bros out there dropping the hottest steaming takes on Twitter. Well, first of all, I should say the synopsis I feel like is perfect. It's one sentence, but it's Ari Aster, Hereditary. Midsommar, were you pumped to see this in theaters?
I was super pumped. I enjoy both those films, especially Hereditary. Mm-hmm. And I think that this film was at its best when it was embracing like the comedy and the horror of the stress nightmare of it all. Like, I think this is the most accurate depiction of stress dreams I've ever seen, ever. I mean, like, this is the cinematic equivalent of the time I got all the way to JFK Airport and realized I left my wallet back at my friend's apartment.
Oh my God.
It felt exactly like that, which is a testament to its accuracy. I thought that it kind of didn't really stick the landing necessarily. It got a little bit indulgent, which is cool for an artist, you know, but I'm not sure if it was totally cohesive, but there are some really funny bits in here and it's super ambitious and you gotta respect a big original swing, especially in this economy.
A big swing in this economy?
In this economy? What? So I'm definitely rooting for this one. I'm glad to see it's making money. Surprisingly making money for like a 3-hour weirdo, absurd, surreal nightmare.
I saw it last night in King of Prussia, PA in IMAX.
Ooh.
Believe it or not, this is IMAX capable film. And I've been avoiding like all the buzz. I love Hereditary. I really liked Midsommar, however the heck you want to pronounce it. And I thought it was fascinating that he was going to like delve into kind of like dark comedy. Drama like in this one. So I avoided most of the trailers. I did see a trailer, unfortunately, like last week. And I almost feel like the trailer does the movie a disservice because it includes some of those like kind of animated scenes and like wackiness where I don't know. I almost went in kind of like with a preconceived notion. This is just going to be like the weirdest thing I've ever seen. But for the most part, it's like a really funny, dark drama, I thought. And like you just said, like it's like anxiety, the movie. And it's so funny. Like, I was laughing out loud in the theater where, like, most people were not laughing. So I was guffawing at so many scenes. Parker Posey's big scene, especially, I was losing it at that scene. I was the only person laughing.
My girl got her chance to shine. I just want to say.
She shined. She shined very brightly. And so I liked it. I agree that the final act starts to lose me a little bit. But I mean, for the most part, I was thinking to myself, like, is this a 4.5-star movie for me? Is this a 4-star movie?
Whoa.
It didn't quite end that way. But I, again, respect the big swing. And some people on Twitter were like saying hashtag career killer. Like those people are nuts. But you got to respect what he went for in this movie. And I do. So I had fun watching this. You talked with Parker Posey. Ahead of Bo is Afraid. Is this real? You had some quality time with Parker?
It's real. I got to talk to her twice in one day.
That's nuts.
Twice in one day, yeah. Slim. That's huge. So I had, a virtual interview where I wore one Josie and the Pussycats shirt, the one that says Josie and the Pussycats is the best movie ever made, join the army. And then I saw her later that night for the red carpet premiere in LA, and I wore a shirt that said Parker Posey on it. So I got to show her my two Parker shirts. She was so, so amazing. And she loved the Josie shirts. And she even recommended a film that inspired her performance in Josie and the Pussycats. Whoa. It's one of my favorite comedic roles of all time, Parker Posey in Josie and the Pussycats, as like this fashionista CEO girly, Fiona. Mm-hmm. So in her own words, here is Parker Posey on the inspiration.
I had just seen this movie called The Apple before I shot Josie and the Pussycats. And there's a lot of inspiration from that movie that I used in Josie and the Pussycats. So go find that movie. It's called The Apple. It is a cult camp classic made in the early 80s about the music industry, shot in Berlin. It's a musical and it is a gas. It is a riot.
So you'd never seen The Apple before. Had you ever even heard of this movie?
I had not even heard of it. And like the second that I got off this Zoom call, I added it to my watch list. I was like, Parker Posey personally recommended me this movie, so I have to watch it. But I'm looking forward to it. It seems to be a wacky, wacky musical.
I mean, the average on Letterboxd, 2.6, but it's streaming on Pluto and Tubi. So if anyone has some free time to fire up some inspo.
It's also one of those funny histograms where every bar, there's no pattern. There is no pattern to this thing, which is kind of a good sign for me. I like seeing histograms like this. It intrigues me.
Check it out.
Yeah, and we have some reviews as well. I really agreed with this one by Jay Stubbs. This film is very long, very indulgent, and while definitely both surreal and absurdist, it is also astoundingly literal. It definitely falls in line with Astor's previous work and that the subject matter is incredibly uncomfortable and terrifying at times, but the message here feels significantly more one-dimensional, shallow, and painfully on the nose. That's not to say the film is without merit. Patti LuPone is a standout, completely menacing and captivating. A lot of people are going to completely despise this film, which will result in its defenders loving it harder out of spite. I fall somewhere in the middle. This reminds me of kind of the Babylon reaction as well.
Oh, yeah.
Where like there's a huge Babylon hive, you know, but it was kind of alienating to a lot of the general public.
Ross left a review, a film that is a glimpse into the mind of an immensely anxious, neurotic, and guilt-ridden individual and how they see the world. It's like the acid trip boat ride in Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, except it only ends when the credits roll. People talk about how Uncut Gems made them so anxious. This movie did that for me.
Beau is afraid. We are all afraid. And speaking of afraid, we have another scary flick coming out. Evil Dead Rise. Directed by Lee Cronin. This is on 49,000 watch lists and is coming out wide. It is about two sisters who find a haunted vinyl that gives birth to bloodthirsty demons that run amok in a Los Angeles apartment building and thrusts them into a primal battle for survival as they face the most nightmarish version of family imaginable. I had to change it from book to vinyl because the synopsis on Letterboxd says that they find a haunted book. That's not true.
Really?
It's not true. It's a vinyl in this iteration.
We need to track down who. We'll launch a full investigation into who said book.
And we'll somebody have them has to do something. They should know that nobody in Los Angeles reads.
The Evil Dead franchise is maybe one of, if not the most beloved horror franchise, I feel like. Rabid fans. They'll go anywhere to see Bruce Campbell. He's out there kissing babies, shaking hands. Probably next to Kane Hodder at a book signing right now at a con. The Evil Dead movie franchise, I feel like, speaks to so many people, too, for filmmaking aspects, like the original and the follow-up from Sam Raimi being so inventive and kind of like bootstrapping those movies. So you've seen this. I have not seen this.
You can't see it because of all the kid gore in the movie.
I didn't know how to broach it. I will say that I got a few DMs saying, Slim, maybe don't go see Evil Dead Rise. I do have a thing with kid gore. If it's like realistic kid gore, I'm not into it and it kind of shuts me out for the whole thing. With that said, this sounds like this might be the most gory movie of all time. That's the vibe I'm getting.
Yes. I would also like to say that there is a cat in the film and there is no cat gore. Do not be afraid. I was afraid for that cat. But it's fine. It's fine. Yes, I did get to see this. And I pride myself on being pretty brave about horror movies. But this one really, really got me. Like, the jump scares are very effective. They're never cheap or lazy. And the gore, oh my God, I was fist pumping in that theater. Like, it definitely leans more into body horror and genuine scares than the originals. Like, it's not nearly as campy and goofy and groovy as the first couple of Evil Deads, but it is still a disgustingly fun time. Like, I hadn't been that freaked out in a theater in a long, long time. At the end, I was like exhausted and shaking, like I was on that roller coaster.
You had to be carried out.
I had to be carried out. It was like I was on the roller coaster from Final Destination 3. But for like 90 minutes straight. And it takes place in LA, so it could really happen to me. It could happen. I have a cat. I live in an apartment building. Like, these are all the things you need, it seems.
I'm just thinking of like old lady Mia coming out of the aisle of the movie theater, like needed to be like, you know, assisted out of the theater. Like, you're just walking so slow and so feebly that like the impact of the movie had on you.
That was kind of what happened. Like, I saw it with our coworker, Brian Formo, and he kind of had to help me out of there. I was a shell. So yeah, that is a recommendation, by the way.
So this review, I saw a review on Letterboxd. I want to read it from Jose Canyas. That says, when I was a kid, I skated to Blockbuster with my friends. As we often did, we went to the horror section and one of them grabbed a copy of The Evil Dead and said, and I quote, "This looks like something Jose would make." So obviously I rented it and, well, I did it. I made one. I was a producer on an Evil Dead movie. I got to put some form of mark on a franchise that I hold near and dear to my heart. So that was a cool review that I saw on Evil Dead Rise.
Well, congratulations, Jose. You knocked it out of the park. We also have a review from Ashley. The first openly transgender male actor in a major horror franchise film in my favorite franchise? Dope as hell. And movie ain't too bad either. In fact, despite knowing full well that it is the world premiere buzz speaking through me right now, I cannot think of anything majorly wrong with this movie. 90 minutes of the pedal to the floor. This is a grand slam. Hey, oh, I just God. Said it. They knocked it out of the park. And look at Ashley saying it's Grand Slam. Look at all these sports metaphors for Evil Dead.
A lot of baseball analogies in this episode of Weekend Watch List. I don't know how I feel about it. Third movie on our list, Chevalier, directed by Stephen Williams. This is in theaters wide. The illegitimate son of an African slave and a French plantation owner, Ballone rises to improbable heights in French society as a celebrated violinist, composer, and fencer. Complete with an ill-fated love affair and a falling out with Marie Antoinette and her court. Inspired by the incredible true story of composer Joseph Ballone, Chevalier de Saint-Georges.
Hoo-hoo, Saint-Georges.
What are you hearing about Chevalier? What's the buzz around Letterboxd and our community?
I've been hearing that Kelvin Harrison Jr. is fantastic as the titular Chevalier. And the supporting cast is pretty stacked, too. You know, we got Samara Weaving, we got Minnie Driver, we got Lucy Boynton as Marie Antoinette. Mm-hmm. So I'm excited for this one because I think it's always interesting to ponder about who gets to write and record history and which stories will survive in the cultural consciousness. So I'm really happy that this particular story is finally being told to a wider audience.
Stephen Williams' name rang a bell, and maybe folks will know him from episodes of Watchmen that was really popular a couple years ago on HBO. Just like I was going through his filmography, I thought it was fascinating. There's True Story on Netflix starring Kevin Hart and Wesley Snipes, which is on Netflix. I guess it's like a mini series that I'd never heard of, so add that to watch list. But there was another thing that I loved. Stephen Williams in 1997 had directed something called Shadow Zone, My Teacher Ate My Homework, which in my investigative research, it looks like this is a Showtime original, like young adult horror series from the 90s. So, and it's streaming on Tubi right now. So I hit play like right away and this 90 minute TV horror movie started playing. It's crazy. Shelley Duvall is in this.
Shelley?
And I need to watch this. I need to watch this from The Shining. Bon Morrison left a review. Here for any film that clowns that idiot Mozart for Chevalier.
Oh, and then Phoebe left a review. Babe, wake up. gorgeous, sprawling, big-budget historical epics are back.
Mm. What's your favorite, like, historical period piece film? Do you have one? Anything jump to mind?
Oh, my God. I'm embarrassed about the first thing that jumped to mind.
What is it?
Okay, I'm going to say it. Les Miserables 2012, okay. Directed by Tom Hooper. I'm a defender. I am a defender of that.
Les Mis.
Sprawling, big-budget, historical, epic musical. Have you seen that one, Slim?
No, I have not seen it. I just know the poster. The poster is very ingrained into my brain.
Yeah, yes.
Iconic poster.
I both apologize that that's the first one that comes to my head, and I also stand by it.
I don't have like a favorite period piece film. The one that like jumps to mind is Little Women, which I guess you could say is like period piece.
It
film?
Is a period piece, Slim. That counts. Yeah. That counts.
Okay, that's my fave. That's my fave.
That's a very good fave to have.
Thank you. Let's look back at last week. Big releases. The Pope's Exorcist dropped last week. Everyone remember Mitchell over the moon for that movie. Sitting at a 2.7 average on Letterboxd. So the community writ large, not necessarily agreeing with Mitchell. Renfield at a 3.2 and Suzume 3.9 still.
Ooh.
Really high. Really high. Anything you want to call out from last week?
I was very lucky and I got to go to the TCM Classic Film Festival in Hollywood. Yep. So I saw Rio Bravo,
oh my
Penny
God.
Serenade, starring Cary Grant, my ghost husband, one of my many ghost husbands. And I also got to see Crossing Delancey by Joan Micklin Silver. That one was my favorite of the films that I saw. Uh-huh. It is a really nice rom-com about a New York Jewish woman who is torn between a smarmy author and a really nice pickle man. He sells pickles.
I had to watch Crossing Delancey for a previous Four Faves episode. And yeah, I just remember being so blown away that that guy was a pickle man. I mean, what a job. I need to become a pickle man,
yeah.
Personally.
Slim Maybe the Pickle sell Man.
Pickles and hot dogs in one spot. Mm-hmm. What a dream.
What did you watch?
I finally watched 65 with Adam Driver.
Yes.
It was family movie day afternoon. We had a hoot. I gave it 3 stars. It reminded me of those like old Sci-Fi Channel original movies that I would watch growing up that were, you know, pretty obviously made for TV movies. I'm fascinated with kind of like the backstory of how Adam Driver got connected with this project. It doesn't, you know, something doesn't pass the smell test. I don't know how else to say it, but some of the set design, like they tried to meld the worlds of like the past and the future. I don't know if they really nailed it, but we had fun as a family watching it. When are you watching it?
When am I watching? When will I watch 65? I should watch it. I'm a major fan of Annette. You seen Annette starring Adam Driver, Slim?
No, I avoided that one. The hype was too nuclear for me to even think about having an opinion on that one.
Oh my God. Annette's another one that I am a firm defender of.
Mm-hmm.
I will defend any wacky musical. So I do have to watch this for
okay.
Baby Annette in honor
Baby in the
of
future.
Baby
Annette. We'll hear.
Yes. So we okay. will hear about this. Shall we look at the top 50 of 2023?
Let's do it.
Okay. What's been shaking it up? Jack says, I'm afraid that Bo is Afraid did not land as high as anticipated with a more divided reaction upon release than it got during that surprise April 1st screening with just Ari Aster stands. But it still does well to place on the list. It's just outside the top 40.
Yeah, Jack updates the comments of this list every week. And he'd been kind of like setting expectations like Bo's Afraid, not enough views yet, not enough ratings. So it'll be interesting to see where that shakes out. Jack also notes the highest new entry is Christian Petzold's A Fire in the top 30, which took the Silver Bear at Berlinale this year and marks Petzold's third consecutive collaboration with Paula Beer. So any of the movies, you know, we'll have a link in the episode notes for Jack's top 50 of 2023. By all means, add these to your watch list because this is really, you know, this kind of sets the stage to see what movies you'll probably be hearing about for the rest of the year. Past Lives, which we've talked about, you know, in previous episodes, that's still at the top of the list. So make sure that that's on your watch list so you know when you can go see it.
Speaking of watch lists, what did we watch last week, Slim? Oh, what did we watch? Waking up in a daze. Oh, what did I watch last week?
We have to hear from you. You dropped a bombshell when we shuffled the last time we were together. Or I think was it the last of the two of us? Or you don't think
it was me
with
and,
you
Mitchell.
And Mitchell. It was you and Mitchell. When you shuffled and revealed with Mitchell that even though we had talked about the Batman Returns movie on Four Faves, you had not seen Batman proper, 1989. This movie changed my life, Mia. What was your viewing experience now watching it for the first time?
I saw you gave it 5 stars. Thank you for this. I really enjoyed it. I had a blast watching Batman. Blast, man. The colors, the camp, the Joker dance, the Prince soundtrack, the smoke, the set design. It was fun. You know, they don't really make them like this anymore. And as I make my way on my Batman journey, I just am continuously struck about how weird Batman is. He is a weirdo. I'm obsessed with him. I think all of our superheroes should be freaky, weird guys who don't know how to talk to anyone.
It's true. You have to be a certain kind of person to wear a costume and fight crime in the dead of night, I feel like. When I was a kid, this movie, it was like the biggest thing to ever happen to me because I had the toys, I had the comics, and then when they were making like a real life Batman movie, you know, at the time, that's something so weird and exciting. You know, because like, you haven't experienced that as a kid before. Now it's like commonplace where all your superheroes are in 5 different movies and none of them make any sense. But yeah, this one had style. And I think when I come back to this, it still is that style and that kind of director flavor that is attached to it that you almost don't really see anymore with like a big expensive property like a Batman or a Superman because they don't want to take a risk. Like, this movie looked like a big risk, but it paid off.
Yes, that's also, when I was reading up on it, it does seem like a big risk. And as we said during Beau Is Afraid, we gotta respect those big risks.
So my movie that I watched was Blue Steel.
Okay, Zoolander.
Blue Steel from Kathryn Bigelow, a year after Batman had come out. Jamie Lee Curtis, Ron Silver, Clancy Brown, Megan Turner, a rookie cop, foils an armed robbery on her first day and then engages in a cat and mouse game with one of the witnesses who becomes obsessed with her. So I think this is, let me see, I always forget the time frame. Let me just confirm the time frame. This is right before Point Break and right after Near Dark. So I guess, you know, this is kind of like a more of a mainstream movie than a Near Dark that she gets. Ron Silver plays like this skeevy stock trader. So at this like robbery that she foils, the guy who's holding up the store gets shot. He drops the gun and Ron Silver is in the store and he like steals the gun. He like takes the gun home and he is almost like aroused by this gun, like what it means. He's like at home, like kind of just like looking at it. So he eventually goes on like a killing spree with the gun. Like he's walking around at night from stock trading, like la, la, la. And then he comes up to an old man and he like pulls the gun out. He's like, can I shoot this guy? So it's like unlocking something in Ron Silver, which I thought was kind of like a fascinating turn of events that this sliding gun in front of him just like allows him to just get crazy. That's like what he's been his whole life. And then he starts dating Jamie Lee Curtis. And she's like, unbeknownst to her, that he has this gun that she's been looking for. She's kind of like a pariah at the police force. So nobody believes Jamie Lee Curtis that like this guy is after her.
That's always happening to her.
It is. In fact, Roger Ebert even called out in his review at the time that it was almost like a modern day version of Halloween or like a more sophisticated version of Halloween, which I thought was pretty cool. Unfortunately for me, there's a rape scene later in the movie that just completely took me out of the film and kind of soured the whole experience. I don't even know if I gave it 3 stars. I can't, maybe 2.5 stars, but overall I liked it, but some of the aspects of it just kind of like bummed me out.
Yeah. What was the economy like in 1990?
So Blue Steel was my shuffle. Let's read some reviews from our community that tagged Weekend Watchlist this week.
Ooh.
Joe Jazzy watched Catch Me If You Can. I love that movie.
Fun.
You ever see that movie?
Oh, I've seen Catch Me If You Can.
When was the last time you watched Catch Me If You Can?
I've only seen it once. Believe it or not. I saw it about one time.
That's a great Christmas movie, in my opinion. Really engaging film. Loved the story and felt like this was a solid blend of humor and great storytelling. Massive star power in this cast. I feel like I never hear about this film talked about, and that's a shame because I'd recommend this to just about everyone. Yep. There you go.
Interesting. I feel like I do hear this film talked about.
Yes.
Well, you're
hobnobbing at like red carpets, world premieres, TCM fusts.
we have another review from Marina Carlson. She watched Snakes on a Plane. You know what? Not every movie has to be a work of art to be a work of art. This movie delivers a good time every time. And you know what else? That Cobra Starship song still slaps, and I have it on at least one workout playlist. Justice for Snakes on a Plane. The song, to be clear, I think both the song and the film. And then there's a snake emoji.
Love that little snake emoji.
I love the snake emoji. He's a cutie. I want to pet him.
Let's talk to. I'm like running the phones at a radio station. Grugrux Dave reviewed Showing Up. This is a vibe I can get behind. There is a certain life lived for art and for artists who fully engage with their muses in the real world. And the care given here to examine those lives, even just a small moment of it, letting you be the people on screen in such a loving way, is a testament to the director. Also, when your friend group can take up a whole row at the theater and laugh at the screen together, will always be a vibe I can get behind. Grugrux is a friend of mine, and there was a... with a other podcast that I do, they had like a little mini meetup seeing Showing Up. What a vibe.
A Showing Up meetup?
Where was it? I think it might even be in Portland.
What?
Probably your old stomping grounds.
That is the place to see Showing Up if you're going to see it anywhere.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We have to head to our watch list.
Oh my God, I always forget about this part.
It's time. We'll go to our watch list and whatever we shuffle first, we have to watch before our next appearance on this show. So I'm going to go to my watch list. I'm going to... filter service by stream only, and I'm going to sort by shuffle. And the first movie that appears, I have to watch. I actually just saw this pop up somewhere. Oh my gosh. Agnes Varda.
Slim!
1985's Vagabond. Streaming on the Criterion right now.
Oh my God, oh my God, oh my God.
The amount of 4.5 stars on this list right now from my friends is off the charts. Oh my God. Mona Bergeron is dead, her frozen body found in a ditch in the French countryside. From this, the film flashes back to the weeks leading up to her death. Through those flashbacks, Mona gradually declines as she travels from place to place, taking odd jobs and staying with whomever will give her a place to sleep.
That's one of the darker Vardas. I feel like she's kind of known for being like, you know, like fun and colorful. And this one gets dark, Slim, but it's a wow. Great film. Great film.
The only Agnes previous movie that I've seen is Le Bon Here.
Ooh, that's also kind of a darker one, even though it's called Happiness.
Yeah, that one I really liked a lot. So that was a pretty good intro for me. What did you get?
So, keeping in this episode's baseball theme.
Oh, God.
I got Bull Durham.
Whoa.
Mm-hmm.
My gosh, what a blast from the past.
Yeah, the tagline, romance is a lot like baseball. It's not whether you win or lose, it's how you play the game.
How about that outfit Kevin Costner's wearing on that poster? It was like knee-high white socks, snakeskin loafers.
And let's not forget Susan Sarandon wrapped around him. Oh,
she
man.
She can't get off him.
Oh, my God. Yeah, so you've seen this film, I presume?
I have not. I get this mixed up. I feel like Kevin Costner did like 5 movies in this era that all blend into one movie, like Tin Cup. I don't know. Was that in that area? He's like, I feel like he was a pitcher in 5 different movies. But I don't remember seeing this movie, no.
Oh, well, in this one, he plays veteran catcher Crash Davis.
Oh, God.
I can't wait. So it is streaming on HBO Max.
Thanks so much for listening to Weekend Watchlist, brought to you by The Letterboxd Show. You can follow Mitchell, Mia, Slim, that's me, and our HQ page on Letterboxd using the links in our episode notes. And if you had the time, maybe consider rating the show on Spotify or Apple. It helps spread the word about the pod.
Thanks to our crew, and thanks to Letterboxd member Trent Walton for the theme music, Eyes On. Thanks to Jack for the facts and Sophie Shin for the episode transcript. And to you for listening. Weekend Watch List is a Tape Deck production. Tape Deck Podcast.